to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and well, everywhere really. I'm Ailey Packham, and we are not counting our chickens in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well, here we are then, with two games to go, and our Premier League status still very much hangs in the balance after we failed to beat Newcastle last Saturday. We'll be hoping that our friends from South London can do us a favour and avoid defeat as they head to Cardiff this evening. Of course, we'll also be hoping that we'll be able to get something out of Arsenal tomorrow, who have lost their last three league games. But then, so had Fulham and Bournemouth. So it may all come down to us denying Man City the title. Joining me today, as we look back on the last week, is, of course, Alan Wes. And we're delighted to welcome back the head honcho of the Treason Show and the star of the Tang Yang Kipper Bang. I had to think about that. It's Mr. Mark Brailsford, who is obviously no stranger to these shores here at Royal Towers. And, Mark, you've got a busy month coming up.
Yeah, lovely to be back. Thanks for asking me back. And yeah, we've got, obviously the Fringe is happening. So we've got Gareth Southgate Ate My Credit Card, which Paul Hodgson and I are doing together.
That's a bit of a change from him advertising pizza, isn't it?
Paul
he's going to eat your credit card instead.
Yes, certainly right. Although slightly unpaid. Yeah. But yeah, so this one, yeah, and obviously the Treason Show Festival Special on the pier as well at the end of May.
Brilliant. And that's a venue which you very much enjoy performing in these days.
Yeah, it's great. It's an iconic place. And, you know, we've got a 21st century spin on what we're doing satirically, but on a traditional end of the pier setting. So we're kind of, it's an ironic place.
That's the end of the pier is the phrase that sort of springs to mind. Yeah. I mean, you associate that with sort of bawdiness and vaudeville, but also you can throw in satire now, can't you?
Well, definitely, in the modern century, we know, and also with topical news as well. Although, I could give you an exclusive.
Go on.
We are going to be a Brexit-free show.
How's that then?
No Brexit will be mentioned. We are just going to do it about everything else.
So
you're going to be so great.
Are you going to do? I mean, if you're going to do it without Brexit, that means basically the whole lot's going to be in mime, isn't it?
No. Basically, we're going to do what the government have been doing with the climate change issue and ignore it.
Ignore it after. Good luck with that one.
Yeah, good luck with that one. It might,
just like we've been trying to ignore Brighton's form over the last...
Yeah, if only sometimes... Some games I'd like to have ignored.
This is largely an apolitical show, but I mean, for that, I mean, we avoid party politics. You can't avoid social politics. But basically, I mean, you as a satire writer, as a comedian and performer and writer, you must get frustrated with this lot, you know, all the other people in power, because... You know, satire, it seems to write itself, doesn't it?
Well, when real life is starting to out-satire the satirists, which is what's happened to us, and then jokes we write a year ago suddenly are coming back again because it's the same old joke, you're going, hang on, because like memes are on Twitter now. We were doing these jokes about Beans and Chris Grayling five, 6 weeks ago. And people are, I don't know if the people are nicking them, I don't think it's that, but I think, you know, there's a lot, everyone's retreading, and it's, we want to cheer everyone up. We're a comedy show, so we're going to make you laugh and do songs about Brighton.
Yeah, they'll throw anyone on the dole, won't they, including satirist.
Yeah, that's right.
Indeed. Okay, well, we're going to come back and talk to Mark about Gareth Southgate and his summer in Russia. And but obviously, we've got to talk about the Albion as well. Now, Mark, it's not been great of late. We're having... I mean, just how much will you be supporting Crystal Palace today?
Well, great question. I mean, I was tempted, but couldn't quite bring myself to shout Eagles when you did your intro. But, I mean, you know, yeah, our friends from the north. Yeah, good luck. I mean, we obviously want them to beat Cardiff. So for a change, maybe we'll be slightly hoping they'll do something.
It's like mentioning Brexit on the Treason Show. You'll do it silently.
We had a great evening last Friday with a lot of Crystal Palace fans. And
Their attitude was basically they really, really, really want to beat Cardiff in order to send them down, because they have issues, you know, from this season that they want to address.
Absolutely.
They want to beat us again. They don't want to have to wait another sort of two seasons in order to get their own back.
But plus the fact, I mean, on a realistic level, they're professional football players.
Yes.
They're looking, if they drop three or four places, you know, you're looking about 6 to 8 million quid in the
Premier League.
They're on bonuses. They're going to be counting that, aren't they?
Absolutely.
And they're going to be thinking, you know what, the Palace sort of position in the league is going to matter. And Hodgson's a proper... professional football manager. Well, I don't think you'll want
to
lose.
To be honest,
that.
All of them are. I mean, as much as we sort of like might ridicule them and ridicule the club and what have you, yes, they are a squad of professional players.
Yeah.
Let's send Brighton down. Sorry, I mean, most of them, they're not going to please the fans by actually sort of doing their bit to send Brighton down. They're going to do their bit to actually you know, do the best by their club.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll really enter their heads. I mean, literally, when you're playing a game, I can't imagine in the back of their minds that it's going to come to the front of their mind going, you know what, I might not take this player on because I want Brighton to go down. Yeah. They're going to be playing on their instincts, which
absolutely
is what players do.
And one or two maybe even for their contracts.
Well, yes, that's true. And they've got some youngsters that maybe, you know, Roy will put in. And and there's a few players who want to make a point. Yeah, you're right.
Well, I think your point about, you know, the position they finish in, I think is probably the key one. Like I say, for the extra million or 2 million or whatever it is for every position they finish in, you know, that's a lot of money. I mean, Palace are spending a lot of money. They've got a lot of money to spend, you know, a big bill coming up if they're going to build that stand.
Yes,
you know, and every penny's going to count for them as well.
Yeah,
they don't have the sort of like the sugar daddy that we've got. So you know, they're going to have to be fighting for every penny.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's crazy though. I mean, I've done a couple of national radio shows this week, and the narrative there is very much that we're safe. And I'm saying, well, no, we're not.
Technically, we're not.
And you know, I mean, I can certainly see Cardiff beating Palace, and I can see them actually the way that Man United are playing at the moment, and particularly with a goalkeeper that's low on confidence, and them fighting tooth and nail for the loss. I can certainly see them getting something.
That's your paranoia speaking.
Well, no, absolutely. But
I mean, logic dictates. I mean, I know football isn't necessarily a logical game, but you know, logic dictates.
Well, as we know, and this is one of the reasons why we love doing football plays, theatre and football have this wonderful dramatic symbiosis, in the sense that in drama you can create the world that you would love to happen, but football creates the world you don't imagine will happen but can. And it's incredible. Like Brighton Till I Die being a case in point was an unbelievable story. If you just did that as a script, you wouldn't be able to write. No one would believe you.
Yeah.
But the reality was actually more dramatic than anything you can create.
And particularly with the season that Cardiff has had as well, particularly with the Emiliano Salah saga and everything that's going along with that.
And Cardiff's behaviour over that has been appalling. Absolutely appalling.
But I mean, you know,
for that, I hope they go. That alone, I hope they go down. I don't like Warnock.
Yeah, but from a scriptwriter's point of view, like you said, I mean, this story—it's a story that could possibly write itself.
I really think there's still some twists to come because I'm totally immersed in a theatre play about football at the moment. You become very, very conscious of how these things hinge on so many twists and turns of plot, you just cannot predict it. And okay, I really am worried that we're going to go down. I really think that's a danger.
Well, let's come back and talk about that in a minute. But let's first look back to last Saturday. And, it was a return to 4-4-2, which I don't think anyone before the kickoff was upset about.
No, it wasn't. No, because Andoni played out wide. I mean, we had two strikers on the pitch, but Andoni was played out wide. I'm not sure if you were watching, you know, Murray was once again up front on his own. But, I mean, you can have any formation you want. If they're not going to pass it to each other properly, then, you know, it matters not. So you know, the point is almost moot as to the personnel, because
well,
they couldn't
argue,
do it.
They didn't know what the formation was at the start, because Andone kept having this lecture from the touchline about where he should be and switching with Gross all the time, because that right side wasn't sorted, and that's where the goal came from.
Anyone would think they hadn't practised it.
Yeah, it looks as if it was a system that was not working, and we know it didn't work, because second half it did.
And to change a formation at this stage of the season, you know, you go. I mean, let's face it. Let's go back to sort of the first half of the season, where we were looking comfortable. We're sitting pretty. You know, everyone was saying, you know, it's quite comfortable. We're going to stay in top 10 finishes possible. Let's push on to that. Blah 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 blah. And we were playing this kind of boring conservative style that people want Chris Hughton to change and play a more expansive and open style. He's had a go at it. Early January, and it really backfired. And so you know, the games against Spurs and Wolves, where we went back to basics and parked the bus and played like as if we were playing Man City every week, and did what we know we can do best. And when they know how to defend well, they can do it actually very, very well. It's not exciting. In fact, it's extremely dull and boring to watch, but they know how to do it. The rest of it is actually sort of...
I'll pick you up on something you said there, actually, Al, because it's interesting. You said about how early in the season, we weren't. Remember that run of three games in the trot? We were lucky to win any of those games. We really didn't look that great, but we got the wins, But I think since then we've been found out, and I think that's why we've had such a bad patch. Then the confidence goes, then management and coaches start to react with different formations that don't quite work, and before you know it, you've got this slide. There's always a team that just, as we know, plummets, and this year it's been us.
Yeah, I mean,
sleepwalking, really.
Well, one of the issues we've got is that there's almost an air of... Chris Hughton reacting to what the fans want rather than going with his gut instinct. Because, like I say, people wanted it more exciting, open, attractive football. And people have got sort of Norwich City fans sort of chirping in their ear saying, oh, he's conservative, he's boring, he's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And you realise that, actually, and we've said this before on the show, it's all a big work in progress. And I still maintain that I'm not going to criticise the recruitment team, which is what some people... I mean, everyone wants to point their finger somewhere. They're not going to criticise the recruitment team. I'm not going to criticise Chris Hughton. I'm going to criticise the players to a point in as much as they seem to have lost their confidence, which was regained clearly in the second half against Newcastle. But what we've got is that when you're trying to tinker it, it's a dangerous thing to do. Surely partway through the season, you have what you've got, and it's not as though he added to the squad, so it's not as though there's new personnel to blood in January.
Well, you could argue there's other players with you. But what's great, though, we didn't do a Norwich and get rid of Hughton, which was...
Well, quite. That
would have been ridiculous. Yes. We've done the right thing. Hopefully he will keep us up.
I am going to criticise the recruitment department, but we're going to come...
How? Why? Why?
We're going to come to that a little bit later on, because that comes in a different segment of the show, Al. But I mean, we've got to address the fact that we actually went 675 minutes without scoring a goal.
Yeah. Which is the longest in the Albion's history.
Ever. We've forgotten that muscle memory of how to win a game. We've forgotten how to play, frankly.
I mean, you know, you saw the games against Cardiff, you saw it against Bournemouth, you saw it in the first half against Newcastle, you saw it earlier in the second half against Fulham, most of the game against Southampton. Yeah. They'd forgotten how to play, let alone, you know, create chances and score goals. It's just,
there is a show business parallel to this, actually, which is fascinating, actually. It just occurred to me when you said that.
Go on.
And there is something that happens to you, certainly in comedy shows, and it certainly can happen on stage. And certainly on a long run, and football and performing on stage sometimes has similarities, and this is one of them, is that if you suddenly hit a bad patch in your confidence level, when it becomes a performance issue and your timing starts going
right,
and it can go, and you try and fight to get it back, it really does sometimes just make it worse. And then your confidence levels suffer, and you can try all the techniques you've got, you can try relying all the knowledge and experience you have. But once you're in a bit of a rut, it really takes a lot of effort and hard work, and sometimes you've got to ride your luck a bit and get back out that way.
And every performer in their career has basically gone through that.
I hit periods in my career. I've been in this game for many, many years, a lot of you know. But I know I've hit points where my confidence and my rhythm went and my timing went, then I stopped being able to retain lines, and that's a disaster. And before you know it, in football terms, it's not like being able to put your foot on the ball. Yeah. You can see the pass, you've hit it 10 million times, and you just can't do it.
And also then what happens is the crowd notices.
And then you're on...
Then you've got this symbiotic sort of like spiral.
It's a feedback loop.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
It's a feedback. Yeah, got you. And so, you know, and sometimes it just takes, I guess, sometimes almost a lucky blip or just a one line or just that sort of bang that rhythm to get it back. And you kind of... Yeah. I mean, I've been to see comedy shows and you can see... I've no idea how to do a stand-up show or anything like that, but as a spectator, I've got to see it. And you can see that, like you say, you can see they're struggling with their timing. You can see that they're not hitting the mark. You can see... And, you know, we're colloquially known as dying on stage.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, and then there's a line that comes in and it just hits the funny bone at the right moment. And from there, a rhythm gets back into place, yeah?
Yeah. And the trick is if you're in a theatre company or a group of people as well, the beauty of you is you rely on then your mates, your team and your supporters. Because then, if you work together, and this is one thing that Hughton's got going for him, is that team does seem to be playing for him, as seen by the second half against Newcastle, then I think you're in with a chance.
Yeah, sure.
Because, I mean, I was going to come to that, because basically they were at odds with each other, they were arguing with each other on the pitch, and it was getting quite unnerving to watch at times. And then Newcastle basically were allowed to like breeze through our side.
Well,
and
for their goal, no one challenged it.
I mean, to be fair, it was a great move, but no one challenged the ball. He was allowed to walk straight through the cross.
That was the problem, wasn't it?
That chest from Rondon, by the way, that was magnificent.
But he wasn't challenged.
But I mean, the defence was they were there, but,
yeah, the where, shape
but
went.
Again, yeah. Dale Stevens didn't seem to know whether to go to the ball or go to the
Because he didn't have the support from the rest of the people around him. Well, no. Everyone's got a role, and bearing in mind that the engine is Stevens, and in this place, Kyle. If those two, you know, they are the fulcrum of everything.
But you saw it with Stevens against Spurs as well, where I mean, it was 87th minute. Everyone was knackered, and everyone put their bodies on the line. But again, he seemed between two minds about whether to like close down the book, close down the shop, or protect the defence. He didn't seem it was caught with no man's
land. Yeah, but it's harsh to blame one person, isn't it?
You talk about the Spurs goal.
Yeah,
that was Kyle, surely, wasn't it?
No, no. Was Kyle having a shot? I'm not having a go at anyone having a shot at goal.
No. As in Spurs' goal.
No, it was Stevens.
Oh, I thought it was Kyle.
Oh, no, I thought it was Kyle. Yeah, it was. He's not going to criticise Kyle.
Well, I love Kyle, but I think he just left him a bit too much space.
I think so too. Yeah. Wasn't actually. It's the same thing, though.
It doesn't matter who it was. It was a midfielder not closing down the shot and trying.
Yeah. Well, that was a moment of concentration, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, like I say, when you're 87 minutes in, you think, you know, is Lewis Dunk about to come out?
That's a player you can tell hasn't started many games.
Yes.
Happens, your concentration.
Absolutely. To be fair, it was a decent shot as well.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as the Newcastle goal was, it was magnificent.
Poor all round.
Yeah, and you know that's
from,
what
from their point of view, it was great goal.
When you've got class players like that, they can pull that out of the bag.
One of the midfielders.
Yeah, but none of the
defenders.
Yeah, but none of the defenders closed them down. I mean, you know, the chest back was unchallenged. The shot itself was unchallenged. It wasn't just the midfielders; it was all of them. The defence was nowhere as well.
It should have been cut out.
Absolutely, it should have been closed down. Absolutely. But
I mean,
even then,
Dummett was allowed to carry the ball 50 yards straight to the edge of our box without being challenged. That is where things were going.
And to be fair to Chris Hughton, I mean, he was livid, wasn't he? Right. So, and luckily though, I mean, the positives there, of course, the second half fight back. There was a bit more of the old Albion about it. And
I thought,
good.
In comparison to what we've seen for the previous 6-7 games, I thought the Albion were brilliant in the second half, and it was a lot more of what we expect. Mm. Let's face it, if we'd have played game, we'd have battered them.
Okay, we'll come to the second half in a minute, but just quickly, Newcastle penalty appeal probably
wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was, actually.
I don't remember it.
Yeah, Bruno clipped.
I think it was.
Perez.
Yeah.
And, oh, sorry, it was Rondon.
Well, the shove on Murray was a pen, wasn't it?
Well, I don't recall it, actually.
But I mean, it was a game of two halves, Brian.
Yeah, it definitely was.
and the weird thing is
remarkable.
The weird thing is that apart from, I can't believe it's just down to personnel alone. Although you could see that Andoni and March had totally different games. Was it really down to because March came on and was giving their left hand side a torrid time, but everyone improved. You know, Stevens' passing was a lot more crisp. You know, Bruno and March were working together well. It was Bernardo playing, wasn't it?
Bernardo
was on.
Is that then also though because the rest of the team went, oh good, right? We got what we could work with this subs. You could see that good. March is on good. Mm.
Gross was playing closer to Murray as well, and it was actually giving them something.
Yeah,
to
it was great.
Show.
Well, like the early days of last season when we were doing well,
The wingers, and I'll include Knockhart in this, although I was a bit annoyed that March had to swap sides because he
was having fun over there, wasn't he?
Yeah, he did.
You get the feeling there's a kind of a
seniority thing.
There is a seniority thing that Knockhart gets that wing, but I thought March was just having fun.
But I mean, what
we
were doing, which we haven't done for a long time, is the wingers actually were playing wide, and we actually were playing with width.
Yes,
and that comes. I think a lot of that comes from the fact that with Bruno was hugging that touchline as well, and he was having given goes. Bernardo was
but
just
the quality,
like a machine.
But the quality all over was just. I mean, if you consider things like the Bournemouth and the Cardiff games, simple passes were just going astray. The simple 10-yard passes without pressure were going astray. But this time there was some really good crisp passing. Yeah.
But in that 675 minutes that we had without a goal, how many crosses did we get into the box? Can you remember one? This hard and you know,
of course
I mean,
you did. They just went flying over the top of them, didn't it? Or got hit the first defender.
Well, no, because no one was bothering to get themselves forward.
It was that first few minutes with that rubbish free kick, and you could set the tone from that. The whole of the first half was like, oh well, God, really?
It was. Yeah, I just think grim. I haven't seen this since Barry Lloyd.
Okay. Was it that bad?
Well, that bad? Yeah, it was.
I mean, you did mention there was a push on Glenn Murray from Bogbrushhead himself, Mr. Ritchie.
I don't recall it. I mean, it also seems such a long time ago as well.
Oh, I wonder if that's Mike Dean. Yeah, I like Glenn, I know.
you mentioned Mike Dean there. I thought he was magnificent, actually.
Magnificent is pushing it.
I think it's a bit excessive.
Yeah, he's one of the best referees.
But to say Mike Dean had a decent game is probably a superlative in itself.
Yeah, it is. He's just thinking, hang on a minute, I need to sit down now.
He's been all right for us this year, though.
Well, to be fair.
I mean, listen, we've had one absolute stinker out of Mike Dean, and that was the Dale Stevens one a few years ago. And I mean, everyone's probably got their story, but you get to realise probably most teams that have had Mike Dean as their referee, it's only one or maybe two games where they've got the arse with him. It's, you know, apart from that, It's the show ponying, really. It's the
yes, he
that's
rubs
what it is. I mean, it's not quite as bad as that sort of like really effeminate referee that you see on YouTube who sort of his yellow card is.
Well, I can't wait to see what VAR's like with Mike Dean games. That's going to be hilarious.
Right, actually, I'm glad you've mentioned VAR because I don't think we mentioned it on the show last week, and it was just something I was reading from PG Moll. You know, the referees
association. PG Woodhouse then.
The referees association.
The same thing.
Jeeves was a splendid referee. Jeeves, what do I do?
Tuppy says no, you know. No, it's. I mean, irrespective of the rights and wrongs of VAR and the whole thing of it being brought in, and I'm still not a big fan of it, is that I cannot believe that they're going to have it where the referees are not going to have a pitch side screen. Now, there's pluses and minuses to this. One, the big minus, obviously, is that it's going to slow down the game. Okay, fine. So if you're going to have VAR, and if you're worried about slowing down the game, then don't have VAR at all. But if you are going to have it, then make sure it works properly. By which, what you've got is that you've got a contentious penalty decision. You're talking about the two that you were talking about. And I can't recall them, but I'll take your word for it. So you've got that. And the referee says, no, play on. And what you've got, because there's no pitch size screen, you've got a championship, and that's all you've got in the studio is a championship level referee who's going to say, Mike Dean, that was a penalty, and he's effectively overruling the penalty, the thing, the ref. Now, for me, and it sounds slightly anathema, on a football pitch, the referee is God. He has the total arbitration of everything. So what you've now got is you've got someone sitting in the gods somewhere. Who's going to be in a position to overrule the referee based on an opinion and a second opinion, whereas it should only be one person's opinion who counts. You know, so the referee goes to the screen, looks at it, and thinks either I agree or disagree. Yes, it wastes time and it drives around the twist. But what instead you've got is someone, by way of saving time, is actually technically overruling a referee. That's not how football should work.
Okay, well, Mark, I mean, we'll come back to Newcastle game in a minute. But, Mark, I mean, you were in Russia.
I was going
to
bring that up, yeah.
And, I mean, you saw VAR work in our favour.
Well, that was what I was going to mention. And the thing about the way they did it, which was interesting, was Kalina, who was the referee's
chief.
It was Kalina who was in charge of it. And he managed the system really well. And the point was, in the stadia, you could see what was happening. You could actually see the VAR.
Well, the actual action.
Yep, you saw it. And you knew VAR was obviously in action. And you remember when we had the semi at Wembley semi-final, I should say, we were told there was VAR.
They were checking for red cards.
So I was okay, well, where is it? Because I was used to, after seeing in the World Cup stadiums, VAR is in the stadium means you see it, and you didn't. So for me, the failure of VAR is you do not have that system.
They were only going to do it for offside.
But my point is, it should be for that. Yeah. And I know they're going to say controversial issues stir up the crowd thing, but Kalina, the way he managed it, maybe he's the one that they should be bringing in to train our assistant referees in these boxes to decide on the VAR and say, look, that system was working better than anywhere else. Can we not at least learn the lessons from that?
Because what you're also going to get is if you do show the action, like, say, for a contentious penalty that you know, or a contentious handball within the box, is effectively you end up not far short of refereeing by consent. Yeah. And it's none of the crowd's business as to who it is. Like it or lump it, it's the referee that does it. And it's that one person. Yes,
he's... I agree, he needs the screen in the middle on the pitch. They should have the screen for
absolutely,
the
on the side of the pitch, absolutely. Yeah. But what you've got...
I can't believe they're not going to have that.
Well, no, that's what they're saying at the moment. I think it's a conversation... I've seen it. It's Keith Hackett. I've followed it on Twitter. And Keith Hackett was, for a long time, the referee's sort of boss. And he is tweeting about this, and he's actually saying, listen, PG Moll, you need to sort this out because this is wrong. What you've got is someone else taking over a decision from the referee.
I see the same tweets there. Keith Hackett is actually quite often wrong.
He's spot on. I think he's spot on. For instance, he said Carl Walker should have gone, so I'm happy with that.
Well, we all knew that.
But there was a lot of referees that said he shouldn't have done.
Okay, well, we scored our first goal in 735 minutes.
You're loving rubbing this in, aren't you?
That's how long it was. I mean, the record was 675, and it took us to 735 for a goal. And it was the evergreen Bruno who exchanged passes and put in that peach of a cross, which Murray just headed into the path of.
Do you think Murray was going for goal?
No. No, he was heading that on for
Gross.
No,
it was deliberately, yeah. I think he headed on for Gross. He knew Gross was making the run, didn't he?
Okay.
I mean, there was a mass eruption of relief.
It's joy, wasn't it?
It was.
I mean, the other thing about that statistic is interesting, isn't it? And yes, we look back on the history of the Albion. It sounds really. But then when you look at the heightened level of the Premier League now and how difficult it is and how far away the top six are from everyone else, top eight maybe, actually that isn't that strange a thought, really, when you think about it, because we are really, I mean, it's Championship level at the bottom of the Premier League, too, and probably you could argue it's Championship in the middle of a Premier League and then maybe League One equivalent gaps below that.
When we were in the top division before, back in the early 80s, I mean, we were still sort of one of the bottom sides, of course we were, and still one of the new boys. But the gap between the top and the bottom was never that massive, to point that you will not get the likes of Aston Villa for a long time, or Ipswich, or Nottingham Forest, or Derby County, back at the top of the division.
Frank Lampard's Derby County.
That's the one, yeah. Back at the top of the league for a long time, just because those six have their cartel at the top of the table. And until such time as something changes...
Well, a European Super League would be the change.
Well,
that'll take a decade, but it'll happen.
But maybe, but also it may be something that happens to one of those owners or something like that. Let's face it. I mean, I would never call Leicester's win a fluke. They did it by rights. You do not win a league by fluke. But the fact that they've actually not even come within a sniff of being able to repeat it says what the resources that the top clubs have. I think it's just they probably all had an off season. I mean, Chelsea finished about 10th that season, I think.
Yeah, there was an alignment of stars where suddenly, unlikely as it was, so many teams were rebuilding or changing.
And Leicester came through. And I would never dismiss Leicester's effort because, on the great scheme of things, considering that the gap of the top six to all the rest of them, I think it's an astonishing achievement.
Yes. I mean, that was Spurs' big chance to win the league that year, and they blew it.
Very Spursy.
They ended up finishing third, and I loved it because it was always Leicester against Spurs, for the title, and they finished third. I think Arsenal picked them to second in the end, and someone did actually say only Spurs could finish third in a two-horse race.
Okay. Well, back to the Albion then, and we pushed for try and get the winner. And
Glenn.
Well, we'll come to that bit in a minute. But, I mean, earlier in the season, we were very, very successful. Most of our goals this season have come from set pieces. But do you think they've become, Mark, I'll ask this to you, do you think they've become too predictable? Because they're identical every time at the moment.
Well, this is what I was saying earlier to a degree. I think, we can't always say it's going to be Houghton's fault, the player's fault, the confidence fault. It's all of those things, perhaps. But the biggest thing, I think, is what's happening is there's lots of coaches. They all see all the games. And over the Premier League seasons, they've now got to know the Albion. And we know now that they work out counteractions to negate all those ploys that we have. So they've worked us out and they know how to defend against us.
It's one thing a Pascal Gross cross coming in towards Shane Duffy. It's another thing the defender being able to sort that Shane Duffy out.
That's true, but how often do you get those balls, like a free kick at the beginning of the Newcastle game? Let's faff around it. No, just get the...
Oh, that free kick was... I wanted
to pull what's left of my hair out. Yeah. He'd already had done.
with our set pieces at the moment, and particularly corners, I mean, there is certainly an element of monkeys and typewriters with it, because they're all identical. I know what we're going to do. Right, we're going to put it to the back post, to the big man at the back post. He's going to head it back across the goal, and we're going to head it in, tap it in. And we keep trying again and again. And it worked earlier in the season, but
to be honest, most clubs try that. I don't think we've conceded from a corner this season, have we?
Well, for a change, because last season we were struggling.
Losing them horribly.
This is us scoring from corners.
Yeah, but I'm also talking about the fact that other teams are doing the same. I don't see too many goals from corners at all this season in the Premier League.
No, exactly, and it's a myth. You know, when we cheer, oh, we got a corner, great! Yay. Actually, statistically, you don't actually score that many
at all. No, I don't. The thing is, you're criticising the Albion. This is the same for everyone, mate.
But we need to have more attacking play in open play to score goals.
Absolutely.
That is what is missing.
Well, you muttered the eternal phrase, "Oh, Glenn."
You put your mortgage on him getting that, wouldn't you, if I had one?
Well, again, I go back to that performance thing. You're striving because you really, really want it, and he did. And because he was just so up to trying to get the ball, he was slightly ahead of it, and that's why he jumped early.
Did he jump early or late?
He jumped early, I think.
Well, and yet, weirdly enough...
Got under it, didn't he?
Yeah, and yet, weirdly enough, his cushion header for Gross to knock in, I thought was textbook Glenn. Yeah. You know, I mean, he has been getting. I mean, you mentioned it earlier, Eddie. He was getting stroppy, and obviously he's getting stroppy because of the lack of service. You know, you could see him wanting to rip Knockard's head off, or getting frustrated with the ball not coming in. Absolutely. I mean, it's not as though he's. Let's face it, he's old, he's smelly, and you know, you can hear his knees grinding, but he still wants that service. So it shows that particular goal for both of them, he's still sniffing around.
I think
hungry.
It's remarkable, Glenn Murray.
Absolutely,
if you look at the,
and what's more, he's got another year level.
I look at the way he gets about the pitch. He's looking after himself. You can see, and I think that's a testament went to the medical department clearly as well, absolutely, and his dedication. I still have a massive fan of Murray.
I think he wants Tommy Cook's record as well.
Really? Yeah. What's the record?
It's 123, and he's on about 106, something like that.
It's gettable.
Well, the thing is, if we go down, it's definitely gettable.
Okay, well, let's leave that one there then. You're listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are, of course, brought to you in association with oldfootballshirts.com, and I'm just handing this over to Mr. Brailsford here to describe for me.
Well, it's a yellow football shirt with a blue V-neck. Am I allowed to say the sponsor's name?
Yeah.
It's got a sponsor's
logo. Not the
BBC,
mate.
It's got EE on the front of it, so it's recent, I'm guessing. And it's got blue shoulder pad pieces and an Umbro shirt. And I can't see the badge because I haven't got my glasses on, so I'm not going to read that out because that gives it away. I can't quite see it, actually.
Actually, well, I'll tell you what exactly it does look like. It looks like a Dukla Pranga away shirt that I used to sell in my shop.
Exactly. It kind of looks a bit like a Sweden shirt as well. It's very yellow.
I can't see. Well, it's that kind of mustardy yellow. It's not quite Paul Barber mustard.
Well,
but
that's because you're sat indoors wearing sunglasses, Alan.
That's because I haven't changed my hassle.
For your radio listening picture, it's wearing dark shades.
It is. I'm that cool. I'm that much of a dude. It says hashtag United on
nobody
it.
Nobody ever.
Letters and postcards too.
I am a dude. I am. Yeah.
Yes, you're definitely male, and you smell like one.
I am the extra large Lebowski. apart from knowing who hashtag United are, I'm going to say it's hashtag United.
It is hashtag United.
Yeah.
Well done.
Because he hasn't photoshopped out the badge.
Basically, here's the shirt of the week. This follows on from the Hackney Wick shirt from a couple of weeks ago, and it's the 2017 home shirt of fellow Eastern Counties League Division One side hashtag United. The side were formed in 2016 by YouTube celebrity Spencer Owen. Yeah, me either. And they initially just played exhibition matches against anyone they could play against. They professional club staff teams, Sunday leagues, charity sides, pretty much anyone who'd give them a game. And the games were posted on YouTube, and the channel gathered a significant online following. So Spencer contacted the FA, and they got registered into the Eastern Counties League. In their inaugural season, they have achieved promotion as champions to the Eastern Counties Division 1, and will play Eastern Counties Premier League next season, which is the ninth tier of English football.
So it's two dogs that turn up and watch.
Yeah, basically. But
Tier 9, did you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and they'll be playing in Tilbury at the 4,000 capacity Chadfield ground, and they will be managed by Jay Devereaux.
No, me neither.
Hashtag United won the 2017 EE Wembley Cup. Now, this is a round-robin tournament for four teams, which is played at the National Stadium, and it's the first tournament to introduce the man-down or golden goal system for a game that ends in a draw. Do you know what that is?
I assume that after a certain amount of time, a player's taken off. So you end up playing a five-a-side game eventually.
Basically, so this is, as Phil explains, this is where a player is removed for every minute without a goal. Eventually, only the goalkeepers will be left.
Oh, God.
Now he's making this up, isn't he?
And the goal ends, and a goal ends the extra time period.
Hashtag delete, that sounds like.
Yeah.
And a former midfielder, Scott Pollock, was spotted playing for Hashtag in the 2017 tournament, and he was handed a trial with our wonderful friends from Croydon.
Oh, go on.
I don't believe a single word Phil has written here.
Well, and
it's April.
It was May now, isn't it?
Current players include Montserrat international defender Simon Peddy.
Come on, that's enough.
And Cypriot defender Tom Williams. Tom initially signed for West Ham in 1988 but never made a first team appearance and has since played well over 200 games for the likes
signed
of Peter
in 1988. How old is he?
I don't know.
Well, if he signed in 1988, that must put him at our age.
Yeah,
well, right, you and I can get a game for hashtag.
That's
right.
I think I'd be more like Control Z.
Yeah. apparently, Jason Malumbi was going to spend time on loan with the tags.
No, but he wasn't.
Declined as his mum's pet Shih Tzu had an aversion to the colour yellow and would almost certainly savage his kit when he brought it home for his mum to watch.
He's making this up.
He's made the whole lot up, hasn't he? Now, I would say you can go and see that shot on Old Football Shirts.com, that and 100,000 others like it, but I really don't believe you, frankly, Phil.
That one is on there. Yes, it's definitely on there. I was hoping there was a better one on there, so it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Just quickly before we move on, we have got a notice board.
What have you got?
Well, basically, there's the Bike Balls, which is actually taken place last night, which is the ride from the Amex to the I-360. Mm-hmm. This is for the Albion community. But there's still time to enter their next European jaunt, which it takes place on...
Get across while you can.
Thursday the 6th to the 9th of June, and we'll include 170 miles of cycling between the French port of Calais and the finish line in Antwerp.
Nice city.
Entry is 299 quid with a minimum fundraising target as well. You need to take that into account. But everyone who takes part will receive a limited edition Brighton and Hove Albion cycle jersey, full ride support, meals, free nights accommodation and transfers between the destinations. For more information, please go to fundraising@albionandthecommunity.org.uk, and that's it's
a great course, brilliant.
I should do one of these bike rides, maybe next.
Talking of Albion the community, I've got to congratulate previous Albion Raw guest Seb Finch for winning the Albion Community Prize at last weekend's awards dinners. Seb's a lovely fella, plays for the Albion Power Chair team, and very well deserved award. Congratulations, Seb, and to all the other winners, including, and we haven't had our one yet. Do we all agree with the would you have voted or did you vote for the new player of the season?
Yeah, I did. Mark?
Mr. Duffy?
Mr. Duffy.
I concur.
Yes.
He would have been my second place one, but, you know, fair
enough.
Well,
we've got the Raw one coming up soon.
We do, yes, we will.
I suspect it's going to be very much the same.
Yeah, we probably will be.
It'd be interesting to see who's in second place.
But, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, well, let's put it so. What is it about Shane Duffy this season, you think? Well, a pair of you are masking this. What is it about Shane Duffy?
He saves balls with his face, almost. He would put his face on the line, not only his body. You know?
Well, that's not exactly the handsomest part of his body, though, probably.
I don't know him intimately, Alan.
Well, Google does.
They are the Gestalt entity, Duncan
well,
Duffy,
aren't they? Yeah, they are.
So how would you split those two apart, then, if you were going to choose one? Because let's face it, Lewis Dunk should probably won this about three times and never has. So how would you have split Duffy and Dunk apart?
I'd have Dunk's legs and Duffy's head.
No, okay. What would... No, forget the rest of it. No,
actually, thinking about Duffy's head, let's not have Duffy's head.
No, let's not. Please not. No, what is it about Duffy that's actually made him beat Dunk? Oh, for God's sake, you two. No.
Go on.
This is not Derek and Clive. Behave yourselves.
No blanket. Yeah, go on.
What is it about Duffy that makes you think he's beaten Dunk? And don't say because he's better. Because, I know that bit.
Basically, because Dunk was largely off form for the first half of the season.
I think after the England debut, there was a little fall away there.
A little fall, off form.
So a couple of games.
I suppose when he got the England call, he was actually off form then as well.
Yeah, you could argue. And I would say one of the things that's fascinating about Duffy, and I loved it, and I wish we'd done it more often, is when he suddenly starts charging up front. If we could have done that more often with the last 10 minutes to go, that could have yielded goals.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it would work, you know. I once saw a great game, Aston Villa, at home, when we were in the top division in the 1980s. And we lost 1-0 in the end, but Steve Foster went up front. Yeah. And it was one of the most entertaining games I've ever seen. It was like 20, hit the bar at the post. Oh, it's fantastic football.
Yeah.
Let's face it, amazing.
If you're having a foot race between Glenn and Shane, you know you'd win. It's not going to be Glenn.
There is that.
Okay, well, we are absolutely delighted to be joined by Mark Brailsford. And Mark, you helped us select a winner for our competition from last week's show.
Okay, well, the question was, we have Peter Ward and Gary Jack, who is doing a show called His Shot, He Scored, It Must Be Peter Ward, which is playing at the Street Works in Middle Street from the 20th of May to the 2nd of June. We asked the question... we knew that Peter Ward had scored his first goal for the Albion against Hereford. Who did he score his last goal against? And Wardy actually mentioned it. He was about to mention it, realised halfway through he was about to give away the answer, but mentioned it anyway. His last goal was against Newcastle United. And the correct answer, and the winner is who's going to win two tickets for His Shot, He Scored, is Simon Maskell. So congratulations, Simon. We'll get the tickets off to you soon. Hope you enjoy the show. It might even be on the same night that we're there, you're really unlucky.
So, Simon, if you could just contact us with your address.
Absolutely.
And we'll
congratulations, Simon. Good win.
But, Mark, I mean, that was absolutely tremendous fun with Wardy in the studio last week and Gary Jack, who he's doing a show about Peter Ward, and we didn't tell him that Peter Ward was coming.
Yes,
before we say this, actually, can we relive your story of the first time you met Wardy? After Brighton Till I Die?
Yeah. Well, if you know Brighton Till I Die, you know, it's the Theatre Royal edition, it's sold out. And
it was just
the
week before the Amex
And we go up, it was, and then we're in the pub having a drink and... And it was great. You know, we met and well, there's two stories really.
Yeah.
But the main one is the one you're referring to, yeah. which is it's the bloke with the pants. But yeah, I said, can I have a photo taken with him? And he said, you know, funny, I was going to take my photo with you. And I could have died happy then. Yeah, I love the guy. He's great. And
absolutely.
He's Ledge. He's Ledge.
Yeah, he absolutely is. But I mean, Mark Brassford, or shall I call you Simon?
No, you can call me Bob. We changed the name.
Oh, you changed the name.
Controversial in the rewrites. Yeah. What we've done is a workshop process where we created at the show, Paul Hodgson, who scripted this whole thing based on my mad trip to Russia.
Okay, let's just to recap. Paul Hodgson also wrote Bright Until I Die.
Correct.
Did he write, he didn't write Mushy, did he?
I wrote Mushy, but Paul directed.
Yeah.
But also Paul and I did Ronaldo at My Credit Card, which is one of its predecessors about the 2002 World Cup. So that... The character was Simon. So so it became, well, should we do the sequel? But then we did a trial workshop version of it in front of an invited audience, and we've completely learned from that and changed it into this whole new world of this whole new story based on the Russia trip. And it's so much richer and deeper, and there's so much going on in it. And we think it's better than Ronaldo, which was very successful, better than Mushy, which was successful. Gareth Southgate, My Credit Card, is also now, we're planning a tour. We might even do a surprise pop-up version of it in Portugal while we're out for the Nations League
good.
As well. So,
but now you've told everyone, you know, it's not a surprise. But
yeah,
anyway.
Well, whether we do it or not, be a surprise.
Yeah, quite.
But we, you know, with Gareth Southgate, My Credit Card, it's so much richer and deeper as a story. And if you watch the World Cup, as we all did, I guess, but, you know, you'll feel the flavour and remember it vividly from what we're doing. But also, this is a fantastic new character we created that goes on that journey and takes us with him. And Paul's scripting of it as well, and where he's taken down the stories and adapted it, is brilliant. And it's a 7,500-word script to learn as a one-man show, which is a challenge. But, my God, I love it. I've done a lot of stuff, not only with Paul, football plays, but I've been in the business a long time, and I think it's going to be my favourite thing.
Now let's rewind to last summer. There was a bit of a zeitgeist. I mean, no one was expecting us to get to the semi-final. Certainly, I think it did help that, you know, Germany stuffed it up and got knocked out by South Korea, which kind of really sort of got our way through to the semi-final.
Hilarious.
But there was a zeitgeist. Absolutely
loved it.
But there was a zeitgeist to it. I mean, it was a summer where it hardly rained. You know, and you know, there was the everywhere was showing the games, and there was you know, the beach was. I remember there was a bit of footage where when England scored a goal, someone tried to do a sliding knee drop across the pebbles. It looks slightly ridiculous. We were spent ages in the Caxton watching the games on so many screens that they had. It was a beautiful thing for us, but that was us in England.
Yeah.
You were in Russia, so give us a flavour of what you saw and went through in Russia.
The one thing that sticks out for me is it's always a great festival of football, of international people getting together, having a beer and a laugh, and it's brilliant. But it all came together in one go with Gareth Southgate's modern England that made me feel proud to watch England again. And
way?
I think that way we're more progressive, we're culturally diverse, and it reflected the country that I hope we are.
And even then, we had the Sun trying to have a go at Raheem Sterling, and everyone sort of
that
defending
was
him.
Disgusting, by the way.
Yeah.
I thought the treatment they gave that kid was just wrong.
Yeah.
And he has risen above it. He's been very dignified about it since, and he's becoming a very interesting, you know, character.
He's quite
himself.
An ambassador
role model.
Yeah,
he's done a great job. And I think a great two fingers to the, you know what, son.
It's just a shame that the album is going to ruin his dream of winning the league this year.
Well, let's hope. You know. Yeah, but you know, the whole thing of Russia was, I think the atmosphere of the place was the thing that really was special. I've been to World Cups,
the cities,
and
all the football
Euros,
aspects of it.
All of it. The people were amazing. And
really?
It's the thing. Everyone's going, oh, yeah, Russia, it'd be a bit dodgy after what happened in France, where everyone's all got, me included. At first, I wasn't going to go. And I go, wow, this was just ridiculous. The propaganda we were sold about it was ridiculous.
We have
and
that
it
ahead
was
of every
amazing.
Tournament, don't we?
Best World Cup I've ever been to.
And
I've only
been to a few.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, we were in Portugal. Not, I don't think we knew each other then, but we were in Portugal, and it was the first one where there was no trouble. I mean, there was nothing in Japan and Korea, obviously, but there'd been some stuff in bits and pieces in Charleroi before that, and there was some stuff in France in '98. Yeah. But this was the first one, and I went there, and a few people I know who I've since got to know were there, and we're all at the same games, and this is, you know, it was great, and I thought that Portugal was, but you reckon it
that
was Portugal.
Very special, yeah. I think Portugal was special in a different way because we were able to take so many fans together and have a great time. Yeah. And we were relieved there were no problems. In Russia, yeah, there far fewer fans for obvious reasons. And that was a shame because I think more people went. I think more people would have had a great time.
People were scared, weren't they?
And they were.
And they believed the propaganda.
You said you were.
I was a bit nervous. Yeah. But I got there and went, oh, my God, this is amazing. It was absolutely brilliant. I can only just say... I'm just so glad I went.
Did you manage to get a chance to take in all the culture and the history and you know, the sort of like even the post-war stuff and things like
that? Yeah, I dropped into it. And, of course, going to Samara, where the Sweden game was, which is 1,000 miles southeast of Moscow.
All on the train,
wasn't it? 36 hours on a train. Third class, that was great. And you get that part of the story. Well, actually, you thought it would be. They're probably the food. Anyway, and being vegetarian was a challenge. Anyway, yeah, I got there. And I mean, my God, and it was a closed city for the space program for the Soviet Union.
Oh, right.
And you're going past all these massive... rockets sat up there, you know, because you know, to say where they were, and you realise that there's a lot of history there, and the Cold War. We are of a generation to remember all this.
Yeah.
So standing in Red Square, you're looking around at where the May Day parades and the missiles and Brezhnev and all that, and there we are with 100 aside, you know, basilicas for goalposts, games breaking out. It was, I have to say, a magical
and,
thing.
And
I
even though sort of the people from various nations all sort of blended in together.
Exactly.
I mean, I suppose that aspect of it, I think, will always happen because we've been there, seen it, done it, and we've seen people. So, you know, you've got the French, well, I was going to say the Dutch, they weren't there, but you know, they've got the French and the Germans, and the Italians weren't there either. Who was there?
Well, the Germans, not for long.
Well, I suppose, but even then,
there were loads of, what was funny was actually going to the Samara game, Sweden quarterfinal, because there were loads of Germans on the tram on the way up there. I'm thinking, yeah, you expected to be here. And that was funny. And that was amusing. I didn't enjoy that.
I mean, from the point of view over here, though, I mean, it was something that the nation as a whole needed because it was getting kind of disparate because of this whole Brexit. Nonsense, and what it actually did, and obviously Gareth Southgate was right at the fulcrum of this. It actually reunited the nation. So actually people who had been falling out, all of a sudden were getting on again.
We showed you what reasoned and clever and analytical based, intelligence based approach to good leadership. Can be Prime Minister Gareth Southgate, as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, I was about to say, I mean, you know, sort of, you know,
Marks and Spencers,
you know, sort of tongue in cheek aside. Let's put it this way, and I know you're an England fan, and I'm going to pull you up on this slightly. When Southgate got the job, bearing in mind he was an under 21 manager who took the gig on when Allardyce got the boot after one game. You had reservations, yes?
Yeah, but I remember him... No, well, actually, I have to say, no, I didn't, because he reluctantly said no to it originally. Do you remember? He was.
And I don't, I'll take your word for it.
I thought that was clever, because he also thought, well, I'm not sure the fans are going to wear this. And slowly he was talked around, and eventually... You could sit, but even before that, you knew there was a methodology to what he was doing. And the way he was managing young players at that level, which we've now seen vindicated, which is interesting, coming full circle to the Albion. Of course, one of the people influential with that approach was Dan Ashworth, who has now been appointed at the Albion. Now, I think what we might see in the summer is an interesting fusion, hopefully, of what Dan Ashworth might bring to us that England benefited from, because England benefited from that knowledge as well as Gareth Southgate.
Absolutely. I mean, additional to that, obviously, now and again, you've got Paul Nevin, who goes and joins the England setup as well. Right. But the point is, I mean, I've said this on the show, and I think you could only really see it from the World Cup onwards. and irrespective of who we played, you still have to play the teams in front of you. It was still an astonishing achievement, and it was a way over achievement from what we were expecting for us to have got to the semi-final. But I think what we had is that I could not believe that the complete 180 that so many people had about him, that, you know, this was when he took the job on, he was an FA suit. He wasn't sort of proud enough. He didn't have that kind of bulldog spirit about him. And you realise that he has just done things. Well, you know this, and I know this. We want Allardyce, and we want, you know, I mean, the whole thing of if a club's in trouble, right, get Mark Hughes in, get Allardyce in, get Warnock in, get Pardew, and all that sort of nonsense that comes with it.
Don't get Pardew.
No, you know what I mean. But all that stuff that comes with it, and what you actually need is someone who's a bit of a progressive. I mean, you know, and this fella's actually our age. You think he's a young fella, and he's late 40s, he's knocking 50. But he has actually been able to do. And it sounds like probably one of the worst things that could happen to England, by the sounds of things, is Dan Ashworth going. I hope that he himself, that his replacement is actually, he's left a decent legacy, because the setup that Gareth Southgate, and I'd like to think that Gareth has enough power, and I use the word advisedly, but has enough power about him that for what he wants and what he feels he needs and the assistance he needs, he can actually continue with that. Because let's face it, we are all seeing at the moment an England side progressing. And we haven't seen that for a long, long time.
Oh, that's what made me proud again to be an England fan, because I struggled at times when we were the arrogance of some of the senior players in the zeros, you know. Now they're humble, a lot of these players, not all of them, I suppose, but I don't know them all personally, but you get the impression that this is an honest bunch of players and they want to play for each other and they're young enough to make something really interesting happen. And that World Cup was a progression point, not the end point.
It was a stepping
stone. And I think the Nations
League
could be interesting. They've got injuries, so I'm not sure we'll win that. But, you know, we're making progress. As you see, the Croatia game at Wembley. You remember that qualification, beating Spain.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. And that is incredible.
No one beats Spain, do they? Yeah.
And this is something to be proud of.
And he was brave, because he did ditch a lot of the old guard. I mean, went Rooney and out went...
And he handled it beautifully. Do you remember?
Well, now, to the point that Rooney was invited back for a swan song, for a concert bout.
Yeah, he got
it was a bit cheesy, but you know,
it worked.
Absolutely. I mean, if you rewind 10, 15 years ago and you see the quality of the England side that was there and you think there is no weaknesses, and yet they could not do it.
Yeah.
So it's one thing, and this is a collective consideration, is it's one thing having 11 individuals who are very, very good at their job, but it counts for nothing if they can't function as a team.
It comes down to culture, and a progressive, interesting new approach like that is only going to work if you have a team pulling to believe in you, and he's harnessed that, and
absolutely,
that is genius.
Okay. Well, obviously, you can hear a lot more about this at the Spiegel tent in Gareth Southgate at My Credit Card. So when is it on, Mark?
It's from the 9th to the 11th of May, 7:30 at the Spiegel tent in the Brighton Fringe Festival. Woo,
and okay. Where do you get the tickets from?
You can get them from the Fringe box office, or you can get them from the Spiegel tent box office.
Okay, and they are £13.50, £11.50. If you're sort of eyes watering at that, don't, because you're in for a treat. And like I say, I mean, I've seen several of Mark's shows and they've always been a treat, but he's saying that this is actually sort of one of the best he's done, or the best
it's my favourite. Whether it's the best is for the is to be decided afterwards, to be honest with you. I'm not going to claim it's the best until we've done a tour of a year.
Have you invited Mr. Southgate himself?
Well, we have, but we have yet to hear from him.
God, what an arrogant self-important
Southgate out.
Well, be quiet, Alan, because we know that Gareth listens to this show religiously every week, and now that he knows Mark's on, he's definitely going to listen.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
I love Gareth Southgate.
Yes.
Okay. Well, does
Gareth Southgate love you?
I don't know.
Well, let's just move it back to the Albion there, and it's interesting actually, because you did mention Dan Ashworth there, and I was talking about the recruitment thing.
We've still got to ascertain what it is he's doing, though. I'm not 100% sure. No. I mean, Paul did mention it, didn't he? When you spoke to Paul Barber the other day, you did mention as to what it is he's doing. I think it sort of seems to be more in line of actually just a kind of a rearrangement of the senior personnel.
I think it's going to take a while for us to actually see what he's doing.
Yeah. And especially not during the close season. I don't think we're necessarily going to see it.
But, I think with the recruitment that we've had, I think that the players that we have signed will... eventually we'll see the best of, but we're not, my issue with them is they're not signing box fresh players. Like, they signed Jahan Bash, he was injured. We signed Andoni, he was injured. And you know, these players,
but they're not going to be injured forever. That's point.
You know,
if we're going to miss out on a player that, you know, because we didn't have them for 3 or 4 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever it was, and then they go to another club and actually tear that up.
What we've actually desperately been lacking, okay, yes, I know they're still at the club, but last year we had, like, Steve Sidwell was in and around the dressing room, Liam Rossini was in and around
still
the dressing
are.
Room. Not before games, they're not.
Yeah, the characters are slightly different now, aren't they?
Well, they've still got the senior players.
They're around
the Glenn
club,
Murray
they're
is,
not around they're the, not they're the around the club, but they're not around the players.
They're on match day. I mean, they don't necessarily go into the dressing room, but they're always there. I know that they're there and thereabouts.
Unless,
for instance, the under-16s or the development squad is playing elsewhere on the same time. And
well,
that's very rare.
Like having the previous guy who played your part in a play in the wings. It's not going to do you any favours on stage.
No.
It's what you do with your team or your cast on stage that changes.
But in this issue, you've got. I think the point is they've got Rossini and Sidwell, we're naming specifically, because they're actually members of staff. But you've got Bruno, who's there to sort of kick bottom.
We haven't actually replaced that. The players that we said we needed players that were ready to go in this league have actually played this level of football before.
So would you say? I mean, both of you. You would say that surely there should be some possibly. A lot of personnel changes over the summer. They need some new players. Need new blood.
Oh, we certainly need players. I mean, because what had happened over the previous... I mean, we didn't actually add to it too much in January. What had happened last summer was we actually added to our squad. But that squad, those players who come in, have not actually necessarily challenged the first 11 as much as they could or should have done. Let's face it, most of that lot played in the what we call the second 11, those that actually aren't first team regulars. Mm. They basically got us to Wembley, so we've got a very good backup squad.
But the first 11 has ultimately hurt us. And I mean, it pains me to say that. I mean, we had a championship month where we're playing Tuesday, Saturday. Mm.
That wasn't just down to us. That was down to Chelsea being in the cup as well.
Well, yeah, I know. But I mean,
and it was Spurs.
But at the end of the day, you know, if we'd have played Cardiff when we're due to play Cardiff, we'd have been in a better run of form.
That's true, actually. Well, plus the fact, Chris Hughton, I mean, he's got a lot of criticism for some of it. But, you know, maybe, I mean, to a degree, there's certainly so much he can do if the raw materials at his disposal are a mixture of off form or not playing well. He's had an iffy hand to play, I reckon.
But your question is almost answered when you're actually in the entirety of the Newcastle game. Again, the first half, absolutely dreadful. Couldn't tramp a bag of cement. They were all over the place. They didn't look like they knew what they were doing. Second half, all right, there was a change of personnel. A couple of things were tweaked and changed around. It was a totally different side. And I say this, as I said earlier, it wasn't just Solly March coming on like he did against Millwall and changing it. Don't get me wrong. I love Solly March, and I think he is seriously still underrated by fans at this club, because I know that fans of other clubs really rate him.
Yeah.
What my point is that everyone started playing really well, and it was like a switch had been flicked on. Now, that's, you know, if you're going to criticise Hughton, you can credit Hughton. You can't sort of like have one or the other. So you saw that the players could do it, and I think they'll go into the Arsenal game with a little bit more confidence.
Well, yeah.
But the maddening question is, well, why on earth didn't you do that for the last half dozen games? Well, because you know how to do it.
Well, that's where you've got to, like I said, I mean, Chris Hughton isn't sainted. He's not above criticism, and he deserves a lot of criticism at the moment.
But I'm not saying he's the wrong man
for the job by a long way. I'm saying be careful what you wish for, anyone who is saying that. But who is going to be the personnel that he picked.
And the setup that you had was largely the same for each of those games. He didn't really change much against Newcastle in the second half. And when you go back to the Cardiff game, and when you go back to the Bournemouth game, it was the same team largely. I'm not criticising, all right, Jack and Batch was playing, oh, he hasn't done much. Well, that's not the point we're making here. None of the players were playing well. You know, the passes were horrific. You know, the goals being given away were stupid. And yet you could see that they know how to do it. So there is evidently no issue with the quality per se, because they've shown they've known how to do it. It's this great unknown that, because a lack of information that we have, we as fans are more likely to create our own fantasies and scenarios as to what the problem is. And the upshot is, we don't know. What we do know is that we can see that those players can do it.
Okay. Well, I would argue the Eredivisie players have been falling short.
Sorry, again?
The Dutch league players.
Possibly.
I really think that's an overrated league.
At the end of the day, I mean...
Except for Ajax, who are actually tearing it up at the moment.
Yeah,
who are
but doing very well eternal kids playing in a progressive new football that is expressing the coach's new way of working. This is the antithesis of what we have.
Absolutely, which is slightly different from someone we get from Go Ahead Eagles or Eindhoven. Mm. Yeah, whoever it is we got our players from.
Okay. Well, on that note, we're going to let Al go off and get catch his breath. And
stop coughing in a minute, yeah. But sorry, if that's the show, then Mark, just one more quick plug for your show.
Yes, Gareth Southgate 8 by credit card, 9th to the 11th of May at the Spiegel Tent, and the Treason show's on at the end of May.
And obviously we'll be plugging that throughout.
On Twitter, yep. And,
Bless you, thank you.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I'll probably pop along there on Thursday. I can't go Friday or Saturday, so.
I'm a great escape.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can get along.
Great.
If I can.
Cool.
And,
escape.
Yes.
Or something.
Yeah, hang on, are we talking about the music event or this season?
Both. Well, we've still got Man City to come yet.
And
let's face it,
it'll be an ultimate perversion and irony that, bearing in mind, we haven't actually spent any time in the relegation zone this season.
That's why when you do theatre comedy and drama and plays, you actually look at it and think it could happen, because twists and turns and drama always confound, and this is what might
ain't over
next.
Till the fat lady starts clearing her throat. Yeah,
precisely.
Okay, Mark Brassworth. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Alan Wares. Thank you. I've been Aidy Packham. We'll see you again next week. Hit the beat and take it to the verse now. Yeah.